From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Africa is rising. For generations, many have seen the continent as an aid recipient, a place of ethnic violence and rough regimes. But during President Obama's trip to Kenya and Ethiopia over the last few days, the talk has been of investment, innovation, growth, how to move away from a history of corruption, human rights abuses, and conflict to build a stronger future, and the U.S. role in that future, where China already looms large. This hour on Point, President Obama and the United States in Africa. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is the U.S. ready to partner with Africa? What should that mean? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's President Obama this morning talking to the African Union in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, outlining a big picture, talking about opportunity and how the U.S. might help.
Unleashing growth that creates opportunity. Promoting development that lifts all people out of poverty. Supporting democracy that gives citizens their say. Advancing the security and justice that delivers peace. Respecting the human rights of all people. These are the keys to progress, not just in Africa, but around the world. And this is the work that we can do together.
President Obama before the African Union today in Ethiopia. Three great Africa watchers with us here today from Nairobi, Kenya. Gregory Warner joins us, East Africa correspondent for NPR. Gregory, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Also from Nairobi, Heidi Vogt, East Africa correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Heidi, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, Tom.
And from Dakar, Senegal, is Amadou Sy, Senior Fellow for Global Economy and Development at the Brookings Institution. He's Director of the Africa Growth Initiative there. Amadou Sy in Senegal, welcome, sir.
Hi, Tom.
Heidi, let me come first to you. What do you make of the president's visit and the way it has been received in Kenya, in Ethiopia, the way his speech today before the African Union is likely to be received by Africans?
Well, I mean, people have definitely really embraced President Obama's visit, particularly in Kenya. You know, here he's really seen as a native son, and people, you know, were very sort of welcome him home, as they said. And this message of business and trade is something that African governments and Africans are very eager to hear. Of course, it's also come with criticism on the human rights front. Certainly, I think the African governments have been happy to sort of push past that and talk just about the business angle.
Gregory Warner, when the president went to Ethiopia and talked about it as a democracy just a couple of months after an election in which the rulers there won 100% of the vote, which raised eyebrows even on the president's own staff, do people say, well, he's going easy because the United States has to compete with China and China doesn't complain about heavy-handed politics?
I think what he said about he called Ethiopia democratically elected. As he said, Ethiopia just had an election where 100% of the vote went to the ruling party or its allies. Ethiopians who were watching this were extremely disappointed. They felt that it was fine that Obama was there and making trade deals and talking about terrorism, but he didn't need to affirm, to legitimate the Ethiopian government as he did. And I think what's interesting is the way President Obama has framed it, and the way he's also framed the issues in Kenya, is that these are young democracies, that we can't expect the full rule of law, we can't expect full rights of the minorities to be respected when things are just coming, in the case of Ethiopia, 24 years after an extremely brutal military dictatorship. And I think that young democracies point is well taken, except in Ethiopia, actually, it's not a progress of each year things are getting a little bit better. It's actually a sharp U-turn. Things have gotten a lot worse. 10 years ago, there was a lot more freedom of the press, a lot more debate, a lot more sort of opposition parties, and now there's a stifling environment. So the fact that the president did not acknowledge that things are taking a bad turn and made it seem that things are sort of, the work is ongoing, as he said, was disappointing to many.
I want to look at the trend lines in politics, in business, in international relations, and more. Amadou Sy, Heidi, and Gregory are in East Africa, where the president has been. You're all the way on the other side of the continent. Is all of Africa paying close attention to this visit, or is it just American news reporters who are paying attention?
Oh, no, I think on this side of the continent, we are definitely paying attention. It's true that since I've been here in Dakar, the case of the former president of Chad, Hissène Habré, who he is going to be tried, the focus of the press. But we are all watching and we are all listening very carefully to what's happening. And the president has visited Dakar, he's visited Ghana, and he's been in the region, so this is important. And if I may, one reason why it's important, so increasingly Africa is coming with a common position on many issues. The work of the African Union, the work of the NEPAD, you know, Africa is increasingly speaking with one voice.
One voice, and in what direction? Talking about economic development, talking about political development, one voice how?
One voice about the economic transformation of the continent, mostly. The African Union has this Vision 2063, which says that in 50 years or so, Africa has to be really joining the club of, economically developed continents. This year you have the Financing for Development conference, which just ended in Addis Ababa a few weeks ago. You have this in September. You'll have in New York the meeting at the UN General Assembly about Sustainable Development Goals, which will replace the Millennium Development Goals. And in December, you'll have the meeting in Paris about climate change, mitigation, and adaptation. In all those fora, Africa is having a common African position and increasingly saying this is what we agree that we should do, because, you know, Africa is definitely changing. And we want to have sustainable growth and also inclusive growth. The president's, the U.S. view is also coming at the time where, you know, typically the U.S. would look at Africa through three lenses, humanitarian lenses, like President Bush PEPFAR, which did a good job. 80% of USAID's budget goes to health in Africa. It's looking at U.S. is looking at Africa through the lens of good governance, anti-corruption, and through the lens of security. But what President Obama is bringing is this economic, this investment, this business lens. And this is something which comes at the time when the Africans themselves are trying to transform their economies.
Here's the president today in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, putting the economic rise front and center.
I believe Africa's rise is not just important for Africa, it's important to the entire world. We will not be able to meet the challenges of our time, from ensuring a strong global economy, to facing down violent extremism, to combating climate change, to ending hunger and extreme poverty, without the voices and contributions of 1 billion Africans.
1 billion Africans to be 2 billion within a few decades. Heidi Vogt, you write for the Wall Street Journal. Is Africa, in fact, seen as moving out of the old basket case, trouble zone, aid zone category toward or into the somehow economic powerhouse category?
Well, you know, this Africa rising narrative is a sort of complicated one. Mm-hmm. Certainly, there's tremendous growth on the African continent. African countries growing much faster than many more developed nations. We're also talking a very demographically very young continent, and that brings a lot of opportunity and possibility. But what we've seen over the past year or two is a continent also getting dragged back into, you know, these issues of militancy that, the people who just want to talk about Africa's growth we're saying that's the past. You know, we've seen the rise of Boko Haram. We've seen Al-Shabaab increasingly being a regional force. There are definitely a lot of issues that are still holding back what's a continent that has a lot of economic potential.
Gregory, when you hear all the Africa Rising talk, does it sound legitimate to you, real, palpable, or does it sound like public relations?
I mean, it's a little bit of both, I think, for sure. As Heidi mentioned, it's definitely can be used as public relations to silence a lot of these stories that are also important about human rights and democracy. But when I've talked to people about this visit in Kenya, especially, and because he was here in Kenya talking to the Global Entrepreneurship Summit, so I've talked to a lot of entrepreneurs, and I asked them what they wanted to hear from Obama and what they particularly wanted him to say or didn't think he could say, and they said, you know, it's not about Obama being here. I mean, Obama's great. We're glad that he's here, but it's about who he's come with. The fact that he's come with Damon John, the founder of FUBU, the fact that he's come with Steve Case, founder of AOL, people who American entrepreneurs would be dying to pitch their idea to, and suddenly Africans get to pitch their idea to these people who might invest in them. So it's not cynical in that sense. I mean, there are really great business ideas here, and especially since, you know, if you talk to American app developers, you know, they may be, well, this is a line, but I think there's some truth in it. They may be working on an app about dating or an app about how to get yourself better groceries faster, whereas the apps that Africans are working on tend to be about how to get farmers not cheated by the middleman who's abusing the fact that there are no roads, or how to use a nut tree to power their houses, or how to stop civil conflict or get the alerts out faster. And there's actually a company, a Kenyan company, Ushahidi, which its platform is now used around the world. So Africa Rising, whether or not it's cynical or whether it's real, there are real Africans with real ideas. And I think that is what Obama was trying to specifically promote.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about President Obama and the United States in Africa. First Kenya, then Ethiopia on this trip. He's made more visits to Africa than any other American president. Many Americans welcoming the president with open arms during his visit. Kenyans, I should say. Here's the sound on Saturday. Kenyans in downtown Nairobi chanting the president's name. And here's the president in his nationally televised speech to the Kenyan people from the Safaricom Indoor Arena in Nairobi, pointing out that coming back to Kenya was in some ways a homecoming for him, referred to himself not just as an African-American, but as a Kenyan-American.
I am proud to be the first American president to come to Kenya. And, of course, I'm the first Kenyan-American to be president of the United States.
A very popular line in Nairobi on Saturday. Gregory Warner, East Africa correspondent for NPR, is with us from Nairobi. Heidi Vogt with the Wall Street Journal there as well from Nairobi today. And Amadou Sy from the Brookings Institution with us from Dakar, Senegal, on the other side of the continent. But as Amadou says, the whole continent watching. Let's go to Ronald in Slidell, Iowa. Ronald, you're on the air.
Hello. Good morning. I was wondering, is China, or is most of the improvement in Africa due to China's involvement over the last 10 or 15 years? And is it possibly a detriment for the U.S. to try and increase efforts or get more involved at this point where we've kind of failed over the last 30 years?
Ronald, in Louisiana, I'm sorry I've got you properly situated there. Heidi, what about the ratio of Chinese investment engagement in Africa versus, let's say, American at this point?
Yeah, well, you know, China has certainly been ahead of the U.S. in terms of getting very involved in investing in Africa. I mean, particularly in infrastructure projects, we've seen that for a long time. I've been talking to analysts about this today, and a lot of people have been telling me, you know, the U.S. has a bit of catching up to do. There's certainly on the part of African governments, I think. They have a lot of opportunity here. They have multiple suitors, sort of, and that's putting them in the driver's seat in a lot of ways for the first time in terms of how, you know, what sort of foreign investment they want. And I think a lot of people are seeing that as a real opportunity to have growth coming from both the East and the West.
What about, though, just in terms of the weight of engagement there, as we speak today, Heidi, we get the sense of China being way down the road from the U.S. You say a bit of catching up. What is the relative scale of investment? Do you have it at hand?
You know, I don't have the numbers on me right now. I do know that China-Africa trade has definitely outpaced the U.S. and Africa for years now. You know, I mean, China has certainly made a priority of investment in Africa. And, you know, their leaders are in regularly on trips to the African continent, holding summits with the African Union. And, you know, the Obama administration has only recently sort of started to do that. We saw last year with the Africa leaders all coming to Washington, D.C. So both the political engagement and the economic engagement are behind on the U.S. side.
Amadou C., how would you compare American economic engagement with Africa versus Chinese? We hear a lot about big infrastructure projects where huge squads of Chinese managers and laborers come in and just build railroads, or you name it.
Yeah, no, China is now the number one bilateral trade partner of the continent, with about more than $200 billion of trade. but overall, the EU, for example, is as a group is the number one partner. It's not just China. Also, I mean, investment from Brazil, India, and other new economic partners, as they are called, is increasing. And also, we see beyond the trade and the investment, we see also some Chinese flexing of muscles in global governance, right? With the setting up of new institutions like the BRICS Bank. But when it comes to China and the U.S., I think really, given the size of the problem in Africa, there's room for collaboration, there's room for complementarity, and of course there is competition which can be good. So, for example, when you take competition, you see companies like Huawei, which is in technology, which is competing with American tech companies like Apple. But when it comes to energy, right? China and U.S. both want to increase Africa's energy production with Power Africa, which is one flagship program for President Obama. But they're not talking to each other. And I think there they should collaborate. They should really see how to meet that goal together. And when it comes to complementarity, you know, with technological advance in the U.S., the U.S. has decreased its import of African oils. But if you look at Angola, it's exporting, I think, most of its oil, or 50% of its oil, to China. When you take railroads, only China would build railroads in Africa right now. But only the U.S. will sell Boeings to Ethiopian Airlines, for example. So I think there's really room for complementarity, for collaboration and competition. But what's important is also to see the Africa's perspective. In order to transform their economies, the African economies also need transfer of skills, they need technology, and they need sustainable investment. So it's also up to them to see, okay, who is bringing me what I need?
President Obama brought along a bunch of American businessmen, entrepreneurs, and others, including Steve Case, founder of AOL. He's now CEO of an investment company in Washington. Case said here that the view of Africa as a place to do business has shifted, said Steve Case, in a positive direction.
There's really great momentum around Africa. I think there's a recognition that over the past decade, Africa has shifted from a problem we need to solve by government aid and philanthropic support, more of an opportunity we need to seize and bring investors and entrepreneurs to the forefront.
Gregory Warner in Nairobi, as you report around the continent, how do you see the relative footprint of China and the United States? Is the U.S. and also ran after EU with its long, of course, colonial ties there, and China with its big push on resources and more?
Well, no, I don't think it's an also-ran. It is second. We don't like being second, I suppose. China's first in terms of a trading partner. America's second. I think that line was passed somewhere around 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we see between China and America is the difference between a command economy and an American capitalist system. And so just, I mean, think about those railroad projects that you mentioned that China is getting involved in investing in, or the airports or the roads they're building or the highways. When a Chinese company comes in on those kind of projects, what they do mm-hmm. is they bid on a contract. They get financing from a Chinese bank, which is set by the Chinese government. The company itself is state-owned or owned by somebody who is connected with the government often, and they also have a set amount of Chinese workers that they're going to hire, so they don't have to deal with training workers or teaching engineers how to do it because they know exactly who they're going to hire. And they just come in this full package, which then they offer, they being the Chinese company, but behind them very close, the Chinese government, mm-hmm. offers to the American government. To the African government. Now, the African government says, well, great, we have the airport that's going to be built and buy this whole package of a system, and all we're going to have is debt. Now, why mm-hmm. does China want to put the African countries in debt? Well, there's a reason there. I mean, you can make friends if they're in debt to you, and also because you can make a better trade for the oil and other resources that China needs. But when America comes in, and this is why I feel like the sort of American-Chinese space race needs to be complicated a bit. Mm-hmm. America can't come in and tell GE or IBM, okay, you invest here. I mean, those companies make their own decisions right. based on their own evaluations of the risks. And what President Obama has said that he's been trying to do is de-risk those investments. Now, what does that really mean? What that means is oftentimes the American government is just present at the negotiating table to say, hey, listen, don't make these guys pay a bribe because we're here and we're watching. That's not as big a deal for GE because GE is so huge, they're like a country, but it's a big deal for mid-sized companies that may want to invest in Africa but don't see it worth the risk. Even though the growth numbers are real, they may lose their shirt. So, I think it's not just about the American government versus the Chinese government. Mm-hmm. It's really about the choices of individual companies and in a very different context.
But can the United States really de-risk Africa? We heard the president jawboning Kenya on corruption. But if he pushes too hard on that, does the U.S. lose favor among the rulers who may be among the corrupt?
I think we can't underestimate how much African countries want to be friends with America. I think it's a very profitable relationship. And, when we're talking about de-risking, it's often, when we're thinking about it, it may be the president of a country may not know about the corruption of his lower officials. Mm-hmm. But of course, Africa is a big place, and this is going to be
I want to come to you on that. Here's the president talking about corruption in Kenya in particular. And this is during this televised speech he gave in an arena there in Nairobi that was seen by much of the country. Here's President Obama.
Here in Kenya, it's time to change habits and decisively break that cycle, because corruption holds back every aspect of economic and civil life. It's an anchor that weighs you down and prevents you from achieving what you could.
Heidi Vogt, there in Nairobi, the president can lecture on that front, and certainly he's got a very strong point. But does that lead Africans to say, yes, we want to get on board with this American message, or that just sounds like trouble, let's work with China, they don't complain?
Well, I think that's not, the anti-corruption message is not even an American message. I mean, that's, if you talk to Kenyans, if you talk to Senegalese, if you talk to Ethiopians, this is something that really resonated when Obama said it. People cheer, people really want a solution to this corruption problem, because everyone realizes that this is what's holding them back, and that it's, it's endemic and it's creating big problems. Now, the thing is, it's also in some ways an easy thing for Obama to talk about. The Kenyan president will also say we need to root out corruption. It's a much harder thing to actually put systems in place that get rid of it. And that's the struggle that you're really going to see in terms of getting businesses involved in countries where corruption is a big problem. And that's why I think, what Greg was mentioning, the U.S. sort of trying to keep a seat at the table and say, hey, we're watching, actually is something that people see as really helpful here, even though it sounds like it's not much.
Here's a kind of booster talk from President Obama talking with the BBC on Friday, but saying, look, our push in Africa is about business and about entrepreneurship.
People are not interested in just being patrons or being patronized and being given aid. They are interested in building capacity. The more we can encourage entrepreneurship, particularly for young people, the more they have hope.
The U.S. president encouraging entrepreneurship in Africa, met in Nashville, Tennessee. Met, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. How are you doing?
All right.
Well, my comment was on this issue specifically, and I think your guest made a pretty good point about how there isn't enough done about the corruption and how corruption is what's stifling economic growth in most of those countries. I'm an Ethiopian American that recently went back, and what I saw was this really big desire to grow economically, and a lot of entrepreneurs who want to grow either both personally and the country's economy. But the problem is there's so much corruption that a lot of the new income goes to people who aren't willing to invest it back into the country. And I feel like the international community needs to do a little bit more to put pressure on these countries, both the issue with the United States being the front runner in this specific point would be that these countries would just go to China and get business from there and investment from there. But I feel like if the international community somehow got together and put more pressure on these countries, economic growth would be a lot faster, and we would see the returns on the investments that outsiders are making a lot better than what we are seeing now.
Of course, it has to be embraced locally. It's hard to do it from outside. Heidi Vogt says there is a big embrace. There are people, many Africans, want that cleaned up. What did you think of the president when he talked about the democratically elected government in Ethiopia? As an Ethiopian-American, Med, who's just been back, how did that ring to you?
Well, I feel like he lacked a certain conviction, certain directness about the issue, just because, of course, he is speaking in front of the government that he was meant to criticize, and that election was obviously a sham. I've never heard of another election that was won unanimously, and this government has been in control in Ethiopia for almost 2 decades now, and they haven't relinquished power, and I feel like more pressure from the international community would help in that regard also. If the government felt pressure from outside to have to relinquish power, to have to actually go through the democratic process, then they might actually comply.
Med, I appreciate your call from Nashville. Here's the sound of the president there in Ethiopia. Joint press conference there with the Ethiopian prime minister. The president sort of softballing the issue of the 100% vote result that many called a sham.
We are very mindful of Ethiopia's history, the hardships that this country's gone through. It has been relatively recently in which the constitution that was formed and the elections put forward a democratically elected government. And as I indicated when I was in Kenya, there's still more work to do.
More work to do, but there's the Ethiopian government getting the democratically elected government label from the President of the United States. Gregory Warner, we just have half a minute here. We'll come back to it, but was that too soft?
That was pretty soft. You know, your caller is talking about Ethiopia, and I think that the corruption in Ethiopia is essentially political, and there's not too much time to talk about it, but just one frame for you. If you think about corruption as a bribe that you pay to a police officer, mm-hmm. that's not the corruption that we're really talking about. What we're talking about is political corruption. It's endemic, and it kind of roots one political party in power and keeps them there.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about President Obama and the United States. in Africa. The president over the last few days in Kenya and in Ethiopia, but speaking today to the African Union, representing what? Nearly all of the 50-plus countries in Africa. The president not so softball today before that organization at some points. Here he is talking about the need to focus on democratic freedoms, not just elections, with the African leaders in Addis Ababa.
When journalists are put behind bars for doing their jobs, or activists are threatened as governments crack down on civil society, then you may have democracy in name, but not in substance. And I'm convinced that nations cannot realize the full promise of independence until they fully protect the rights of their people.
The president of the United States talking in a very forthright way there about civil liberties. Also talked today before the African Union about how wealth gets moved around or not moved around. A lot of new wealth in Africa, but also a lot of poverty, said the American president.
Alongside new wealth, hundreds of millions of Africans still endure extreme poverty. Alongside high-tech hubs of innovation, many Africans are crowded into shanty towns without power or runner. A level of poverty that's an assault on human dignity.
The president today in Ethiopia. Amadou Sy is with us from the Brookings Institution. He's with us from Dakar, Senegal, on the other side of the continent today. Heidi Vogt is with us from Nairobi, Kenya, East Africa correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, and Gregory Warner, who covers East Africa and beyond for NPR. Emmanuel is calling from Austin, Texas. Emmanuel, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
Hi.
I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. I've always wanted to comment on some of the things I listened to here, but I'm glad I'm here today. I think Africa had everybody was so happy when Obama was elected into office in America, and every African leaders, everybody, even the people, were so happy. And that happiness was not just because first African American president. They thought maybe there would be a lot of changes in more communications and working with Africa to help African people in economic issues and corruption and all these things.
Yes.
But I feel like it's surprising to me that for the past 7 years or almost leaving office, and this is he's not making all these trips to Africa and trying to lecture Africans on how to do things. And then I'm looking at it like it's just going to be a Photoshop. And he's saying all the good things and saying all these nice things. And that's it. He's going to come back here and life goes on and the same practices continue.
What more could he have done, Emmanuel? What more could one man, even the President of the United States, have done in these years in office?
Well, it's a lot he can do to help Africans. Most of these countries in Africa are young, we are still, we don't, some of them don't even know what democracy is. We come from a cultural background. But the problem is, he's saying all these things and eager to work with Africans, but then if you don't agree with some of his views, like let's say gay and lesbianism, for example.
Okay.
So most of the countries in Africa that said, "Oh, Obama, this is not our lifestyle. We don't condone this. You can't push us to legalize these things." Then he says, "Okay, if you're not gonna do this, then don't come to us for any help." So it's like if it doesn't benefit him or benefit America or the West, Europe included in these things, because they've been using Africa for years now.
No question about that, back to colonial times. But if I may, Emmanuel, I want to pick up both those threads, the big one. But first, this particular issue of gay rights in Africa. He talked about that during a press conference with the Kenyan president on Sunday. Here's President Obama.
If somebody is a law-abiding citizen who is going about their business and working in a job and obeying the traffic signs and doing all the other things that good citizens are supposed to do,
and not harming anybody. The idea that they are going to be treated differently or abused because of who they love is wrong.
The President of the United States with his view on this front in sexuality for Kenya to think about. The Kenyan president, of course, Uhuru Kenyatta, at that press conference, said, look, this is for us a non-issue.
For Kenyans today, the issue of gay rights is really a non-issue. We want to focus on other areas that are day-to-day living for our people.
But homosexual acts illegal in Kenya, punishable by years in jail. Gregory Warner, is it a non-issue or is that a political framing as well?
I think, you know, it's interesting when you talk to gay and lesbian activists here, a number will say that that's exactly what they want Kenyatta to say. They don't want to put the political spotlight on this. I'll just give you a small story that I remember from Uganda. Uganda has a much more strict anti-gay law. So because of the activism around that, a number of people were writing in to Ugandan Tourist Board and saying, this was we Westerners writing in, emailing and saying, listen, I'm not going to be coming to your country. I'm not going to go on safari. And in fact, the Ugandan Tourist Board got so many of these emails that they passed it off to a guy who's a tour operator who they knew was gay. And they said, listen, we're getting all these emails. We don't know what to do with them. Can you just deal with them? Because these are your people, right? This is how they talk. So the guy wrote these Westerners and said, listen, I'm a gay Ugandan. Why don't you come on down? We have a lot of beautiful wildlife to show you. Mm-hmm. And they were flummoxed. They said, wait a second. We thought that in Uganda, gays were not allowed to talk. But in fact, I think what happens in the political space and then what happens between people in real life is different. And it doesn't mean that gays don't have real issues that of discrimination. In fact, that person I was talking about has now sought asylum because his life was threatened. So it's not a joke. But he was telling me that, you know, he would prefer to work under the radar to keep making friendships, to just have casual conversations with people, to let Ugandans deal with this issue, have the West help, but don't shine such a bright spotlight that it singes them.
Well, there's the president. What does he bring a spotlight or not? It wasn't just gay and lesbian rights. He also talked just about women in general in that nationally televised speech in Kenya and what he called outdated traditions.
Treating women as second-class citizens is a bad tradition. It holds you back. There's no excuse for sexual assault or domestic violence. There's no reason that young girls should suffer genital mutilation. There's no place in civilized society for the early or forced marriage of children. These traditions may date back centuries. They have no place in the 21st century.
How do you vote in Nairobi? We've been talking about economics and business, but what do you see in Kenya when the President of the United States, with his family roots on his father's side there in Kenya, comes and lectures along these lines? How is it received?
Yeah, I mean, this was really interesting, particularly this address to the Kenyan people, because think about how that would play in the U.S., right? If some foreign president came to visit and gave an address to the American people and said, here's where I think you guys need to change. And it was actually really interesting to me that Obama, you know, has this particular sort of space that he can occupy in talking to Kenyans and also in talking to Africans, that people do sort of embrace him and say, you know, this is a guy who has the same roots as us. And he can even talk about something like female genital mutilation and say, this is a bad tradition. Like that's pretty strong. And he was talking to, you know, an audience of youth, a bunch of students at this stadium speech where that quote came from. Mm-hmm. And they applauded and cheered this and sort of said like, yes, he's saying the hard words that need to be said. And so, I mean, I think it really did say something about at least how one sector of society, the youth, the urban youth, really have embraced this and feel like he's standing up and saying the things that need to be said.
Amadou Sy, in Senegal, is it your sense that African listeners give this American president a special audience, a special ear, because his father was Kenyan when he talks about cultural issues? or in the end to see the leader of a distant land, and that's another thing.
Well, I think, you know, for countries that have been under European colonization and where the probability of having an African and a president from African descent is really, really, really low, especially now that you can see some trends, xenophobic trends and so on increasing,
yes.
I think we all here in Africa appreciate the fact that the U.S. as a country, as a superpower, has gone that far to have a president who's of African origin, mm-hmm. at least his father. If you look at the Pew Research surveys about attitude also, the attitude towards African attitudes towards the U.S. is very, very positive. It's I think the highest in the world. So the U.S. has this goodwill, if you say that it has this brand which is really strong in Africa. But if I may come just to a few things that I've picked up previously.
Yes,
if I may. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about corruption. You know, this. You know, Africa is not one country, and there is
certainly
a
not.
Difference between the perception of risk and the realization of risk. If you take the surveys by Transparency International, some African countries are ranked as less corrupt as China, India, Russia, and so that's one thing.
Yep.
And if you look at also, you know, what African countries are doing, most of the money that is spent in Africa comes from the taxpayers, right? It's government budget is higher than aid money and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you look at the aid that's going to helping countries raise domestic revenue mobilization, raise taxes, it's less than 1% of aid money. We also have the problem of illicit financial flows, where some big multinationals also sometimes illegally can really end up not paying much taxes. And third, about gender, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, again, Africa, when it comes to gender, we should not really... it's true we have some issues, but we should not also generalize. If you take Rwanda has more female parliamentarians than the U.S., than many European countries.
Yes.
Even historically, if you think about the Kingdom of Benin, the decision to go and fight against the French army was taken by the women council, who overruled the men council, and then ended up fighting against the French. And finally, on female genital mutilation, there's an NGO here in Dakar which has been founded by an American. It's called Tostan and won the Conrad Hilton Humanitarian Prize. And what she did is go and tell the women about the health consequences, debate with the religious leaders, and the women themselves decided to stop the practice.
The president speaking to the African Union today, but Amadou is saying, and of course, look country by country, look country by country. Pete in Covington, Connecticut. Pete, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
I'm an 8-year Army veteran, and after we came back from our first deployment in 2009 from Iraq, we'd have briefings from senior officers, and they all agree, and they briefed us about the future of warfare and the possibility that World War III will be fought in Africa due to the Chinese presence and the growing Russian presence in Africa, and a lot of senior leaders agree that World War III, we fought over natural resources that Africa has, and due to the foreign presence of the Chinese and the Russians.
Pete, our time is short. Let us pick it up. Heidi Vogt, how do you respond to that whole notion? I mean, certainly China has its eyes on resources globally and as a major manufacturer wants and needs them. What about the military piece of the American presence?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to sort of separate those two things out. There is a lot of desire for the resources in Africa, but that's more of an economic issue. And most of the conflict that's happening mm-hmm. is much more with insurgent groups with a political beef fighting against each other or fighting against governments for territory or for control. And we certainly, I mean, the issues we're seeing in Africa right now that seem to lead to conflict end up being a lack of governance or people who feel like they don't have the power they want inside of their own countries. And that's where I think we see a lot of these attacks and insurgencies coming up.
And has been the immediate focus of the American military there. Amadou C., do you go away from this visit? Do you look at the U.S. Relationship with the many countries of Africa in a hopeful way these days? What's your basic posture here?
I think the glass is half full. This is the fourth visit of the president. It's the highest number from a sitting president. But we need more aid. But we know also the thing to me is that attitude is very important. And he's changing the attitude and seeing us as partners rather than just aid recipients.
And Gregory, last word to you. A rising engagement by the United States or diminishing in relative terms over time?
You know, I think about the challenges that I have as an NPR storyteller in this region, because basically you want... are you hearing me okay?
Yes, I am.
You want to
20
be,
seconds.
Okay, good. Just coming up. You want to be able to tell stories about people in this region and yet make them feel relevant to people. And it's interesting how much we've been talking about China in this conversation, because I think China is one of the ways in which Africa feels relevant as a battleground, as an economic battleground, as a very real battleground, as your caller just suggested. But the real question is, what does Africa mean to us as Americans now? And I think to do that story, you really have to look 20 years in the future. You have to look at 20 years in the future, 35 years in the future, when there's going to be one-fourth of the world's youth are going to be African.
We're looking right now, Gregory, we're out of time right there. Gregory Warner with NPR, Heidi Vogt with The Wall Street Journal, Amadou C. with the Brookings Institution. Thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.